I'm going to do a brief introduction on our two speakers today. So first of all, Greg Moran. Greg is a fellow of the Institute of Actuary, apart from a period of 33 years as the internal actuary at the Transport Accident Commission in Victoria. Craig has been consulting in the general insurance since 1986. 10 years ago, Greg and Clive Amery established AM Actuaries Limited. They basically do consulting services, specialize in general insurance, mainly in workers' compensation, medical indemnity, accident compensation, and public liability. Greg last co-authored a paper at the Accident Compensation Seminar in 2000, 13 years ago, and he felt it was time to do another paper before he retires. The second speaker is Julie Evans. Julie has worked as an actuary in the general insurance industry since 1992. Following 15 years as a consultant, including a number of stints overseas, and I strongly encourage overseas experience, Julie joined WorkSafe in 2008. She heads the Actuarial Services Division and is involved in many different aspects of scheme management, both operational and financial. And Julie is also a fellow of the Institute of Actuary of Australia, and she is a serial presenter at conferences like this one. So on this introduction, I'm going to pass the microphone to Greg to start the session.
Thank you. Before I start, I just want to give a bit of background to this paper. I do a lot of work with self-insurers, and when I look at their outstanding claims liability, obviously you include potential recoveries from third parties and reinsurers. And it's only in a very small number of my clients where there is a reinsurance recovery. And the ones that I have at the moment is basically have been caused just by fatal claims in New South Wales, where it's death benefits nearly $500,000, and then there's a annuity to the dependents for a number of years, which costs around $200,000 to $300,000 on the age of the children that my claimants have got with the self-insurers. So with retentions of only $500,000, they're the ones that are getting up there, and I'm not really seeing any other large claim experience in my self-insurance sort of portfolios. And I've also looked at, I mean, obviously the schemes have always been there, and they give for any employer unlimited cover. I mean, there's no, they don't really have buy reinsurance themselves, so they cover by a employer paying a premium, they get basically the unlimited cover and the excess of loss is thrown in. So about a year ago or 9 months, I actually wrote off to all the schemes, well, three of the schemes, and asked whether they were interested in doing some analysis on their large claims. And Julie took the small hook, and we got together and basically said, well, what can we do? We came up with a brief abstract, submitted that, and then we got accepted for this conference. And then I've got an email I printed off, and it was dated in early September, where we just listed a number of questions. And basically, it was just to try to understand some of the large claims experience in a large workers' comp scheme. And in the email, basically, it has those same questions. What proportion of large cost is estimated paid? What are the large claim frequency relative to the scheme premium? What's the large claims cost relative to the scheme premium rate done? What's the trends in it? What's the variation by industry? How does it vary by retention level or size? So we came up with a set of questions. Julie had the data, and off we basically ran, trying to find some answers to these questions. So it's all about large claims. We actually cover claims from $250,000 to over $2 million. In the values, apart from a small area where we look at some self-insurance excess of loss retentions, everything's expressed in June 2013 current values. A large claim is simply claims paid to date, where past payments have all been indexed up to June 13 values, plus a statistical case estimate that in itself has determined it at June 2013, and into June 2013 values. Most people would be aware of the statistical case estimate that WorkSafe has used for many years, and it's exactly the same model that we use based on the June 13 values. We're basically just looking at the high-level analysis of frequency and distribution, and I should say that there is a paper on the website and also a presentation, so there's a fair bit of detail in there. It's all just WorkSafe. We haven't got any other states' data as such, and it's only the insured employers. So in the years that we look at, it does cover years when some employers did exit the scheme as self-insurers, either through to the Comcare scheme and or through the Victorian scheme itself, and all of their claims have been excluded from both the... Well, the claims have been excluded and the remuneration has been excluded. We look at the average premium rates over the past as well for comparison purposes, and we also obtain some data from the self-insurers in their excess of loss premiums at various retentions. And at the end, we'll show you some experience by the industry. Firstly, on the data... most should be aware Victorian benefit structure is no-fault benefits plus the common law for economic loss and pain and suffering for the serious injured. The years that we look at are from 2000-2001, which in all the graphs is shown as 2001, to the 2007-2008 year, again shown as 2008. So we're just looking at the older claim years, and the reason for that is that we considered that by looking at those older years, the large claims would be more evident. In other words, they hopefully would have paid a fair bit on them. The youngest would be at least 5 years in duration, and the oldest over 10. And the SCE model hopefully has got enough data in it to give a fair prediction as to ultimate cost. The scheme itself has about 28,000 claims per annum. So I was interested in the last presentation here with New South Wales having 20,000 per quarter. The number of large claims in the actual study, there's 14,000 above the 250,000, and only 100 claims across those 8 years have incurred costs greater than $2 million. And the excess of loss premium rates that we've got in the paper are from actual the self-insurer's experience, which goes through to about 2013, and that will be shown. This chart simply shows for all reported claims. It's a slightly... it is 8 years to June 2008. I haven't got one of these little beasties. Have you got one of these?
No,
I don't. Oh, don't you? Okay. The purple bars, or the ones on the left... are the numbers, the count, and you can see obviously the ones less than 25,000 account for 79% by number. And the blue bar next to it is the dollar value. So you can see if you look about halfway along, there's a stream of 0.5 million to 0.75 million with about 1 to 1.5% of claims by number, and the incurred cost is 15%. So that's basically the half a million mark, and you can see how with only a few percent of the actual total claim numbers, they certainly make up the vast majority of the claims cost. But that is nothing new for actuaries and people understanding workers' comp schemes. What we've got in this chart is simply the claim frequency for each of those years expressed. So it's the number of claims above particular levels. The top line in that is claims over 250,000. The red line is claims over half a million, etc., etc. So this is simply the numbers of claims which are in our data for each of those accident or years of report, treated as accident years or injury years, divided by the dollar million current value remuneration. Okay, so it's as a percentage of wages, in effect. Now, down the bottom, of course, you can't see it very well. The lines are very flat, and so we've expanded that on the chart on the side. And you can see the features of this is that since 2000-2001 year, the frequency of all the large claims has fallen considerably. One thought on that, one of the features of the data which Julie pointed out to me was the being in Victoria, the manufacturing industry certainly had a decrease over those years compared to the increase in the service industries. So because this is just looking on the global WorkSafe area scheme, we haven't normalised it for industry. That perhaps would be worthwhile to see if the drop is driven partly by just a change in the industry's underlying WorkSafe. There is potential for a number of scheme changes over these years as well, but apart from the reintroduction of common law in 1999, I think it was, after having been out 1997 through to 1999, there were some changes with various rules and lump sums, I think, but they are described in the paper. I won't go through them here. But overall, we didn't think that had a huge impact on the incurred costs. Certainly maybe certain changes between, say, common law or impairment lump sums or whatever, but no great change on that. There's a potential that a lot of this drop is seen because of the improved occ health and safety over the years from 2001 through to 2008. And, in fact, just because that's the accident year ending, obviously any improvements in occ health and safety or claims management up to 2013 would be impacting these large claims. So that's probably a good news story, together with improved claims management over those years. There could be possible under-declaration of the wages going back in those early years. WorkSafe have basically been on a continual improvement on the wage declaration of the employers, and the wages that were used as the base back in 2001 were simply the wages in that year. They haven't gone back to try to adjust for the under declaration perhaps of wages in those years. And the other point to remember is that there is obviously some uncertainty because there is estimation in the future cost of these large claims. So I've basically covered all those. So on that last point, the uncertainty using the ultimate cost for individual cases with the modelling, this chart shows for, again, by year of report and by the claim range, how much of the total incurred cost is subject to the model or the estimation. And for the earliest injury year, which probably should be 2001 shown on the chart, but I'm not sure, it's basically less than 10% is subject to estimation for claims up to $1 million. And even for the claims above $2 million, there's still 40% of those early claims have got an estimation, of the $2 million, $800,000 at least is on average the estimate. And obviously, over time, where the earlier claims, 2008, 7, 6, have had less time to be paid, you'd expect that the proportion of the total incurred cost that is estimated would increase, which this certainly shows. There's a bit of a wobble in a couple of the very high areas due to the very low number of claims seen in some of those areas. So, in general, it's not unexpected that it starts off at the 10 and creeps up to about 25-30% for the $1 million claims. But at that level, even if the estimation model is out in whatever way or form, it probably has not impacted, hopefully, the analysis that has been undertaken. Turning now to the dollar cost, so this is the incurred cost in dollars divided by the remuneration or wages, again for those same accident years. It's a very similar trend to the claim frequency. In fact, it's actually a slightly greater fall. There is in the paper there's a chart that shows the average claim size over the durations, which we didn't put in the presentation, which shows a very slight decline over the period. So this is a very similar chart to the claim frequency. Again, a steady and consistent fall in the average cost of large claims over time. Now, to make some comparisons, the average premium rate levied is shown there, going from the 2000-2001 year through to the current 2013-14 year. You can see the average premium rate for the first few years up to 2003-04 had been kept level. That was after the reintroduction of the common law back in 1999, and in hindsight it may be thought that that average premium could perhaps be over the break-even type premium in hindsight, but that's the average premium that was levied at the time. And then there was a consistent fall, which basically has followed the fall in the claim frequency or the cost of the large claims that we have seen in this in our analysis. And then from, the interesting thing is from 2008-09, the average premium rate has basically levelled out without a lot of change. Again, change of industry would impact the average premium rate levied, but there hasn't been that drop that we saw up to 2008 in the premium has not continued on through to 2014. The chart next to that shows for the cost of claims above $500,000, all we've done is divide those costs in each injury year by the average premium rate. So that has shown quite well. It was of interest that it has been fairly flat from 2003. So there was this substantial drop 2001-2002 when premium rates were level. Then since about 2003-04, the cost of claims which have reached $500,000, so it's from their first dollar up once they've reached $500,000, that represented about 25 to 30% of the total premium. Now, we could have expressed this as a proportion of claims cost in each of those years instead of as a percentage of premium rate. And I mean, if you do some maths and assume that there's, say, a 75% loss ratio in current value terms, that 25-30 would represent something closer, I think, to 40, about 40%, 35 to 40%. So, tell a lie, 33. So, those are the points that I think I've already covered. There wasn't any funding levy on those premiums, although in hindsight there may have been some premium above the break-even rate. Hank's review in 2010 has impacted all these claims. Okay, that's there. But it was that fairly level impact of large claims as a percentage of premium. So all those charts have been looking at the cost from the ground up. What we wanted to also do was to look at the cost of the excess of the claims. And in these charts it shows for claims, the top line claims above $1 million for various, again, injury years 2000-2001 through to 2008 as a percentage, again, of remuneration. Consistent drop. So, sorry, the chart on the left is the chart we've seen earlier. I was just testing there. And the chart on the right is the amounts showing the percentage of the large claims cost on the excess. So that's like a excess of loss policy, excess of loss retention of, say, $1 million or $2 million as a percentage of wages. Both show that downward trend. We've only looked at the ones above $1 million in these two charts. The other charts are in the paper. You see a very strong fall in 2005, and I think the paper said there were only two or three claims above $2 million in that year, whereas for the 2004 injury year, there was something like 10 or something. I don't know. So obviously, injury years are impacted by the experience, particularly at the very high retention levels. But even having said that, it gives you an idea of the cost of claims above $1 million in the 2008 is about 0.04% of remuneration. And that's from the scheme. So, turning now to some self-insurers. We ask self-insurers for their Victorian portfolios only if they could provide us with their excess of loss premium that they paid, net of GST and net of brokerage, and the retention level that it was at, together with the remuneration for that year. Now, one thing I've got to mention about excess of loss is basically for all the data we receive back from self-insurers, like there was there might be 8 years shown of excess of loss, and the retention was $1 million each and every year, or $500,000 each and every year. As you can see in this chart, the green line is for $1 million retention. The rate was about 0.065 back in 2007-08, and it fell fairly consistently through to 2011-12, flattened off a bit, and then just took a small tick up. But the retention was kept at $1 million each and every year. Now, whereas all the previous data we've looked at, every dollar we saw was in June 13 values, these retentions are not in June 13. The retention for the excess of loss of 2008 of $1 million would be equivalent to, say, $1.3 million in June, in June 13 values. So we've got to try and make some allowance for that, but let's just carry on. So you can see the excess of loss premium being charged to reinsurers for self-insurers for $1 million cover is, say, around the 0.05% of wages. And the experience that we had from the scheme for $1 million was roughly 0.04% in those later years of 2007-08. So not inconsistent. And as you'd expect, as the retentions go higher, the cost of the cover, the XOL, falls. This chart shows for the self-insurers that had the $500,000 retention, the green line there, that was the rate that was charged. It bumped around a bit, but it was around the 0.12, 0.14% of wages. Again, those are in $500,000 in the year of injury. So for the 2004-05 year, $500,000 retention back then is worth about $700,000 today. So I've drawn you two lines coming from the scheme, which is the scheme's cost for claims above $750,000, and which is the lower line, and schemes for claims cost above $500,000, only the higher line. So it's quite fortuitous that for this example, the cost of the excess of loss has stayed within those two limits, because in 2005, the cover was roughly equal to about a $710,000 current value term, and for the 2008, it was equivalent to about $630,000. So we are comparing a bit of apples and oranges here. We've got an excess of loss premium rate being charged by reinsurers to self-insurers, and the other one is a current value cost of claims cost only from the scheme. But what can we say? We can obviously, the XOL premium includes expenses and profits, plus allowance for investment earnings. The duration for a reinsurer to pay under an excess of loss policy for a high excess can be many years, much longer than obviously the normal insured or the self-insurer's payment on that claim, because it has to reach the $500,000 or $1 million. But offsetting that reduction for allowing for investment earnings, of course, you've got need for the reinsurer to add expenses, profit margin, etc. So, you know, do they even out? Who knows? But anyway, the impact going on this very small sample compared to the scheme sort of gave some heart that the XOL premium that was being charged by the reinsurers was not out of line with what perhaps the scheme was having in claims cost. Okay, all right. Well, you didn't want to say anything, Julie. Go away. Now, one thing we did do, which I thought was quite interesting, you may not, we compared, as you step down from, or step up from a $500,000 retention to $1 million retention to up to the $2 million retention, what is the drop that you see in the excess of loss premium rate compared to what the claims cost drop for those same steps is. So this chart is trying to show that if the cost of $500,000 retention was 100%, if you went to the $1 million retention, the actual raw claims cost based on the work safe data dropped by 75% roughly, whereas the excess of loss premium rate only dropped by about 50%. So is this to be expected? I rationalised it to say that the excess of loss reinsurer would need perhaps a higher profit margin and or just fixed cost, a higher amount as the retentions go up, just because it becomes a more risky area of insurance for them. So it's not unusual, for I think to see that the drop as you increase the excess of loss retention as a self-insurer, the drop that you see in the premium rate that the reinsurer will charge you is nowhere near the drop in your claims cost. So you would expect that, I think, and I'm hoping that maybe some reinsurers could agree with that thought. Then we did some work on by industry. Now, there's a lot of dots in this chart, and each dot represents an industry grouping, and there are about 200 or 300 industry groups. And what we're basically doing was looking at within that industry group, the cost of large claims divided by that industry's actual rate, and we use the 2012-13 rate as a base. We know that's not equal to the rate over the 2001 to 2008 period we looked at on claims. There's a bit of a mismatch, but it's all relative and all happy. So the first chart that's got this sort of diagonal look about it was just looking at the claims cost rate above $500,000 for those industries divided by its 2012 rate. We turned that round a little bit and made it more complicated, and it's for each industry in the one that, where it goes flat, if I can get it right, it's the large claims cost rate for that industry divided by the average premium rate for that industry expressed on the y-axis, and along the x-axis is the industry premium rate. So you would expect this to be a horizontal line around about the 25% type figure, being 25% being all the way back to here, this line here of the red line where it's basically being 25% of the premium. So we looked at that by industry, and of course there's a scatter because some industries are still quite small in their size, and whether they got a large claim or didn't get a large claim would impact it. You can see some dots very high, which are unfortunately these industries where they have incurred a couple of large claims above $500,000. It could only be one or two to cause it to go up there, and then some right along, you can see there are actually some sitting on the y-axis, which obviously did not receive any large claims in the period that we looked at. So that was a very large scatter diagram. I asked Julie to go away and try and group them, and she did. So we now see this, which is basically the same data, but in six industry groups, six groups of industries, and the industries are basically just being ranked and are within the same sort of average premium rate. And you can see this diagonal line that we would be expecting and or the horizontal line is about right. So that's sort of implying that even the schemes, even the industries which are being charged just 0.5% of premiums as their rate, or being charged 10% of premiums, they're all basically having the same percentage of large claims contributing to their premium, which I think is good news and sort of adds that the premium basis is hanging together. And just to show the impact of industry on the XOL rate, we had two self-insurers that were both at the $1 million retention, but certainly in different industries, and you can see that one was being charged this rate of about now it's about 0.05% of wages, and another one which is being charged only 0.01% of wages. So they're very small premium rates, but then again we know that from the WorkSafe data that the actual scheme for $1 million is certainly less than that 0.01%. So, yes, a couple of now finishing off slides. That's all to do with the industry staff. Right, what might it all mean? Certainly, it's nothing new that we've come up with the conclusion that large claims costs make up a considerable portion of the total costs with relatively few claims. The cost of large claims as a proportion of the premium seems to be relatively stable year on year. The chart on the premium showed that there wasn't a lot of drop in the average premium from 2007-08, but that drop up to 2007-08 was broadly consistent with the fall that we saw in large claims. We saw a fair bit of volatility of claims, and so even for a scheme as large as WorkSafe, total state, with 26,000 claims per annum, that there is volatility when we start looking at the large claims. The question is this an issue for self-insurers? It may be, although if the cost of excess of loss is only, you know, in 0.05% of wages, maybe it's not a big impact. Differences in industries do exist, but there was certainly a consistency in the proportion, even within an industry, of the large claims. Where to from here? We were unsuccessful. We use the word we. I mean, I was the one who was trying to get data from overseas and I failed. It would be good perhaps to see if there was anything of comparable data from overseas. Would other schemes in Australia be prepared to or be able to supply similar data? The big need is to have an estimate part of it, and I'm not sure how consistent that is for, say, schemes like New South Wales where the different agents put the case estimates on. Victoria, we were using the SCE model. Would it have been useful to show it as a percentage of total claims costs? Perhaps. Probably wouldn't change much of the outcomes or our considerations or what we think it all means, but it would have been probably interesting to do that. It would have been good if we get some more data from self-insurers on their excess of loss premiums to compare it by the industry and compare those industries to the WorkSafe industry rates. That may be something that would be possible. Even to use the self-insurer's claims data to see where their proportion of large claims is would perhaps be of use and may be something to do in the future. The end.
Before we go to the question from the floor, Julie, do you want to add anything to what Craig just put in the presentation?
Only if there's no questions. So I think we go to questions, yeah? Come on. Julie has said I won't get my bottle of wine if I don't open my mouth, so. Leslie Anderson, TIO. Curiosity question, it might have been out of the scope of your paper, but I'm interested in the 100 claims that you've got in this. How many of those might be eligible for the NIIS? In other words, in those five broad injury categories.
Oh, I didn't look at it.
that way. I'm guessing probably all of them. I'm looking to some of my colleagues in the middle rows there. From the territory experience, I wouldn't guess that, because you can have high schemes that are psych, overlays, etc., etc., and they wouldn't be in the NWIS.
Yeah, we get something of the order of, I'll say, 10 cases a year that we classify as catastrophically injured. So it's receiving large amounts of attendant care, and I would put most of those probably up in that category.
John Draven from Swiss Re. Greg, you invited a comment from a reinsurer, and I do completely support your rationale there in terms of the way the excess of loss premiums relate to the cost as you look at higher attachment points. Basically, your capital is a function of uncertainty, so uncertainty is related to the standard deviation, and what you see as you look at the higher attachment points, that the coefficient of variation, that is the relationship between the standard deviation and the mean, is an increasing function of those higher attachment points, because you're talking about fewer and larger claims, therefore more capital required to support that business. And that's probably one of the things that explains the relationship you saw in the chart there. And one possible additional comment could be that what you have to price for when you're pricing that stuff includes some catastrophic scenarios that might not have been visible in the actual data.
While you're there, John, I've got a question.
Thanks for standing, John. Where do you get your claims, raw risk claims cost rate for, say, Victorian self-insurers? I mean, where do they get it? Because I don't think this has been published before, so I'm just curious as to where all these excess of loss reinsurers get claims data.
Hang on. Who's asking who these questions, Greg? Look, I think I would defer to my colleague Jiten Varalia if he would be interested to make a contribution.
Yeah, no, thanks for the question. I think... Yeah, look, it's a good question. I think over time we look at, you know, obviously looking at the Australian excess of loss rates, we'll try to make use of and where possible try to compare different jurisdictions and try to make adjustments for it. You're right, we don't have the granularity for every single state. We'll also try to make use of, you know, Swiss Re. From our perspective, we'll have, you know, global statistics as well in terms of workers' compensation. So, yeah, it's not a perfect science in that respect in terms of coming up with some of those risk rates. So there is an element of, you know, uncertainty there. We can't pretend that we can be accurate to the nth degree in coming up with those. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other question on the floor? Looks pretty quiet.
Isn't it thought provoking? Nothing.
Julie, you want to add anything? You said if they didn't have too many questions, you would add a few comments.
Where should I go? I think some of the comments about the pricing of XOL. Certainly what we were looking at here was gross claims cost too. There will be recoveries which are not reinsurance recoveries, so there will be some third party recoveries, or in our case non-trivial recoveries from the TAC for cases involving motor injury. So on a net basis the frequency would be lower, frequency and or cost would be lower, but it was all individual claims, so we didn't look at event type risk. From memory, I don't think there is a lot of that in the work cover experience of very costly events, but there will be a couple. What else have I got? I haven't even heard the bell ding yet. Sorry, Greg, I shouldn't have hurried you along when we were in the middle there. I must have got my... must be on Melbourne time. So we've still got an hour. come on, ask me a question. Hey, the bell... Still have to buy the bell. Oh, no, we have a question, Rick.
All right, thank you.
Just quickly, Leona from WorkCover WA, and we haven't really put a lot of focus on large claims, probably because we haven't really needed to, I suppose. But your points there about would other schemes be interested in looking at large claims, sharing data, I don't see any reason why not from WorkCover's point of view, and always interested in looking at different ways of measurement. So some of your questions there about whether it would be worth looking at the proportion of total cost and so forth. So just, yeah, happy to be involved in any further work that you might want to progress.
I'll refer you to Greg because I'm not going anywhere near this again.
Daniel Smith, interested in your thoughts about the average rate or proportion of the premium rate by industry was the same. That was what you concluded. Was that expected, unexpected? Did you look at it in any way to see that that was justified?
Define justified.
Well, sorry, I mean that the conclusion is that it wasn't that you've got a small industry with, you know, one extremely large claim that just happens to get to that proportion rather than... Because we looked at costs, I wasn't sure whether the frequency was the same as well.
Didn't look at the frequency. I was a bit surprised, to be honest. I thought that the lower industry rates would go with lower exposure or frequency or cost of those large claims. The grouping we did to get to those six, if you want to fiff on one, Greg, was just by looked at it by industry rate and then split the portfolio according to REM, basically cut it into six equal groups. So I'm a bit surprised. I suppose the one down the very low end is a bit lower and the one up the very high end is a bit higher, but it was a surprise. It was a surprise to me. I don't know what you've got.
No, just... yeah. No, it didn't necessarily surprise me, but I was very pleased to see it, put it that way. But the one point I just want to raise is going back to the drop in the premium up to 2008 was certainly in line with what we saw with large claims. So if WorkSafe have got it right, if we revisit this paper in 5 years' time and extend it to the 2013 accident years, I would be hoping to see that all those trends of large claims go flat. So in line with what they've done with their premium, unless they've been ripping us off. But that's the impression I'm getting, given the close correlation. I said hello. It didn't get recorded, Julie. So that's what I would like to see in 5 years' time. Maybe my swan song.
Session. So thank you, everybody, for your participation, and thanks to our guest speaker, Greg and Julie.